Member supported Hawaii Public Radio, HPR One. I'm Dave Lawrence. And today we've got a multiple Grammy Award winner, Tony Award winner, Laurence Olivier Award winner, NPR vet too, hosted her own show. And a person who's been giving back on a global level with the United Nations as an ambassador for food and agriculture. Dee Dee's Feathers is Dee Dee Bridgewater's latest. She's in town at the Blue Note through Sunday. And thank you so much, Dee Dee.
You are so welcome. I'm very happy to be on the show with you.
When you have a legacy like yours, what goes into putting a set list together and perhaps how Dee Dee's Feathers works into that?
Well, first of all, I'm coming with a young band led by the trumpet player Theo Croker. He calls his band Dark Funk with a V instead of the A in dark, okay? Because he's young, okay? They are some very fine young musicians that I've been mentoring. We can go into any one of my recorded efforts. I have been taking them around the globe with me. They became quite fascinated with material that I recorded as a guest artist. And so we've incorporated some of those songs. So I'm trying to do with Theo and Dark Funk a more contemporary take on jazz, giving them some place to do their improv. And we will probably throw in a number or two or three from Dee Dee's Feathers, but I don't like to repeat. So the only CDs of mine that I have not introduced these gentlemen to is my Kurt Vile CD, This Is New, and French CD, J'ai des Amours. But it's about doing the music in a way that is accessible for the audience so that they can have fun and getting our groove on. Because I like to move. I like to party. And I'm going to be naughty a little bit. And I don't know how naughty I can be on this trip because my grandchildren are coming. So we'll see.
It's a great lead into one of your first musical ventures, a R&B trio. You're just 16. If you can describe some of the way that your father and the world around you and other nurturing forces brought these influences into your life.
Well, we called ourselves the Iridescents, and we were trying to model ourselves after the new groups that had been signed to Motown Records, because I grew up in the now infamous city of Flint, Michigan.
I know that.
Having terrible, terrible, terrible problems. At the time that I was a youngster in Flint, my father really didn't get involved in what I was trying to do musically until I had to disband the trio because they didn't want to rehearse because they discovered boys. And I was really quite serious about my singing. And I entered a couple of talent contests. I won one. I got to sing at a club in Flint called the Motor City. My father had to be my chaperone because I was 16 and wasn't allowed to be in the club until I performed. So I had to sit in the kitchen, and then when my name was called, my father escorted me out. And then he introduced me to a man who had a quintet that he was involved in, Sherman Mitchell, with my father in the band. And then sometimes Sherman would set up a trio for me to perform with, and I started just performing around Flint. When I went to Michigan State, when I decided that it was the university I was going to go to, my father had a dear friend that was working on his doctorate degree there, Andy Goodrich. Andy Goodrich then took me under his wing, and I became a part of his quintet, which was the Andy Goodrich Quintet Plus One. I was the plus one. So that was the involvement that my father gave me. When I had told him I wanted to take piano lessons while I was in high school, he said, girls don't play instruments, girls sing. He came from that generation.
Right.
As a result of that, I never learned an instrument, and that has kind of nagged at me, but it is what it is. And then we make our choices. So I chose to then concentrate on the singing and left playing an instrument alone. I had dreamed of us having a band together, a father and daughter. I had a crush on my father when I was a teenager. There was a lot of jazz music played in my house, LPs, and then my mother, of course, was into singers. They did not have a large vocabulary of music, but I listened to everything that they played. And then the radio was very important when I was growing up. The local R&B radio station, which was WAMM or WHAM, and then I could pick up a station out of Detroit, whose call letters I forget. Then in the evenings, I was able to, after my parents went to bed, tune into a station out of Memphis, WDIA. If I positioned my antenna a particular way and put the foil on it, and put it in a certain part of my bedroom, I could get it.
So beautiful that the radio played that role.
Oh, yeah, honey, putting that, yeah, making them little rabbit ears on it and try not to get it too heavy so that the antenna would just completely fall over. Using a transistor radio now, okay? So I'm sure that the listeners are like, what? What is she talking about?
You mentioned Michigan State in your time there, and you got to do a tour of the Soviet Union. Anyone who has followed your career knows that international success, you've got children that have grown up abroad because of your international lifestyle. Did that first engagement abroad have some influence on your desire to look at the world as sort of your oyster?
You know what, Dave? I've always had a fascination with the world and living outside of the United States. When I was 7, I told my parents that I was going to move to Paris, France, and I was going to be, and I always use these words, an internationally well-respected jazz singer. Now, I don't know at 7 where that came from, but it has come to pass. My dream has been realized. And I always said the good thing about Flint, it made me want to get out of the city, out of the city and travel, because it was an industrial city built on General Motors and AC spark plugs. In fact, some of my girlfriends got summer jobs working in the factory. When I went and put in an application, they told me I was too intelligent to work on the assembly lines. So I then went and found myself a job as a secretary for a land purveyor. And I also was a candy striper at our local hospital. My mother had always told me, learn something that I could make money off of. And so she was a secretary, so she told me, you should learn secretarial work. But I always prided myself in being excellent in whatever I did. So every temp job that I got, they wanted to hire me. So I think thing that we can take away from that is I always take on whatever the job is and give it my all.
Being 7 and saying you want to be an internationally well-respected jazz artist.
And well-respected was really important in my mind. It's interesting.
Somehow you knew to get that was probably going to require what you just said, that when you took an approach to something, that it would be at a Laurence Olivier Award-winning or Tony Award-winning level. And on that, before I wrap it up with you, Lena Horne played Glinda the Good Witch in the movie, but it was you who had that role in The Wiz on Broadway. Mm-hmm. Where's that fit into your cherished memories?
Doing The Wiz on Broadway, we who did it were so blessed because we had a producer in Ken Harper. He brought in people to teach us. He had us go to dance classes. We had a makeup artist that would actually spend time with each and every member of the show. He would buy all of the material we needed. Today, if you do a show, you've got to get your own. You got to figure out your own face. The same with the hair. The woman that was in charge of wardrobe worked with us on taking care of our costumes. My original costume is now in the Smithsonian Institute.
Nice.
We had a kind of theatrical upbringing that was really unique. My most recent theatrical experience was doing an off-Broadway show based on Billie Holiday, and I was able to work with the other people that were involved in the show to help them with their makeup, with different things, and to show them what they needed to do based on my first experience. So that first experience made such an indelible impression on me that I've been able to take that with me wherever I go. And it also spills into my performing as a singer.
It's really a powerful story, an example. Like listening to a 7-year-old girl who's determined to be a well-respected jazz singer, and it just turns out you're saying you're a very goal-oriented person from day one.
Well, maybe so. Never thought of that. Thank you, Dave.
I'll leave you with this. If you'd be willing to do a follow-up and just record a short conversation.
I'd love that, Dave. I would absolutely love that.
I really appreciate getting to do this today.
It was wonderful. We talked about things that now have my little brain going, like goal-oriented. I never thought of myself as a goal-oriented person. And yeah, you've given me some food for thought, so thank you.
You are welcome. And I'm giving you a big hug, too. I hope you can feel it.
I'm giving you a big hug back. I'm looking forward to meeting you.
God bless you. Me, too.
Okay, God bless you, Dave. Aloha, this is Dee Dee Bridgewater, and you're listening to my friend Dave Lawrence on member-supported Hawaii Public Radio.
If you believe, within your heart you'll know that no one can change the path that you must go. Believe what you feel and know you're right, because the time will come around.